have you along for Top of Mind today on BYU Radio. I'm Julie Rose. People with a disability, and that's nearly one in five Americans, are less likely to receive routine medical care, things as basic as flu vaccines and cancer screening. One reason for this disparity is that doctors' offices and clinics may not have accommodations, such as exam tables with adjustable height. Another reason is social stigma associated with disability. In a recent New York Times article, Dr. Dhruv Kular at New York Presbyterian Hospital suggested part of the solution is encouraging more people with disabilities to become doctors. Kular is also a healthcare policy researcher at the Weill Cornell Medical College, and he is on the line now. Dr. Kular, hi. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
It is strange to think that a system dedicated to serving the ill is not good at meeting the needs of the disabled. What's the disconnect there?
It's true, and I think that's something that is so perplexing about how a lot of patients who have disabilities don't get the same care as other patients do because, you know, we in the medical profession, that's part of our mandate is to help people who are ill, who are sick, who can't sometimes do things that they need to do in their regular lives and to try to help them get back to where they need to be. And so I've always found it perplexing that we do so much and we work so hard to try to care for people, but often we leave people who have disabilities, whether it's visual disabilities or hearing disabilities or motor disabilities, we really leave them behind and there's a lot more we can do for them.
Why would somebody with a disability like you just described not get a basic flu vaccine or not be offered a cancer screening, though? Describe how this actually works, these disparities come about.
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons that these types of disparities happen. And, you know, sometimes it's not the disability itself, but it's our medical system that's not really well equipped to handle it. So, for instance, people with motor disabilities, they may have trouble getting to a doctor's office. They may not have the transportation available to them. Once they are at a doctor's office, a lot of doctor's offices aren't equipped with the necessary equipment to care for these patients. So that might be transferring patients from a wheelchair to an exam table. That might be training staff on how to do these types of things or examine patients with certain disabilities or impairments. And so that's certainly one reason, kind of a very logistical reason that occurs.
So in a situation like that, the doctor might agree to see the patient, but they would skip the exam, or they would just do an abbreviated exam, or they wouldn't do a full breast cancer screening or something because they can't get the patient onto the table.
Precisely. I mean, that's one part of, I think, what's going on is that we may not do the exact same thing we would do for a patient without a disability who might be more mobile for a patient with a motor disability of some sort. But I think it goes beyond that, and I think these are some more cultural issues in medicine, and there's still an element of stigma, of communication challenges, of inadequate training for staff and for clinicians. And so some studies have found, for instance, that doctors are less likely to ask patients with motor disabilities, women with motor disabilities, about cervical cancer screening because they assume that they're not sexually active, or they're less likely to counsel patients with disabilities to stop smoking. And patients themselves often feel that doctors don't treat them the same or treat them as fairly if they have a disability. And so these are studies that have come out over the past few years that suggest that it's not just the logistical issues of getting to a doctor's office, getting to the hospital, and having safe methods of transfer within the hospital, but it also goes beyond that to training clinicians to be more culturally sensitive to people with disabilities.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that second aspect, because the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed decades ago for the very purpose of enabling access, making sure that people with disabilities are not kept from basic treatment and are able to receive equal treatment and avoid discrimination. Why has that not been sufficient, at least to handle some of the problems you talked about with regard to access? I mean, why would any doctor's office in the country exist without the ability to accommodate somebody in a wheelchair or without, you know, limited mobility?
You know, it's a great point. And as you say, the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed actually in 1990. And part of the impetus for the act was to kind of reaffirm America's commitment to equality for all people, and it kind of declared that physical and mental disabilities in no way diminish a person's right to fully participate in all aspects of society. And so that's a very kind of lofty ideal. I think where the issue breaks down is that the implementation behind that isn't always 100%. And so a lot of the implementation of how hospitals or clinics or other governmental agencies go about meeting that expected threshold is left up to them, or is not often very closely monitored. And so not every clinic, not every hospital actually complies with the ADA as one would expect and as one would hope.
Can you speak to the consequences of this unequal treatment? Does the data now bear out the fact that people with disabilities have worse health, not because of their disability, but because of the gap in their care?
Well, I think it's often very hard to tease these things out. And so a lot of times health is complex, and it has to do with environmental factors and behavioral factors and genetic factors. And so it can be hard to tease out exactly why people with disabilities may have worse health outcomes. But I think there are some studies that suggest that it's not just the disability, but it's actually the way we go about treating it. So one study, for instance, on breast cancer treatment for women with and without disabilities found that women who have disabilities are less likely to receive breast-conserving treatment as compared to full mastectomy. And then when they do receive this breast-conserving treatment, so that just it's called a lumpectomy, they're actually less likely to receive radiation afterwards. And that radiation is needed to eradicate residual cancer cells. And so they end up having about 30% higher mortality, 30% higher risk of death than women without disabilities. And so in this case, it seems pretty clear that it's not just the fact that they have a disability that might be contributing, but it's also they're not necessarily getting the exact same treatments.
Uncomfortable as it may be to even admit, it's as though women with disabilities in that instance are being treated as if their life is a little less valuable, or as if their chances of success are less likely, so we're going to give them fewer options.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I certainly, you know, working in the medical profession, I don't think it's a malicious thing that's happening. I think it's something that we in the medical profession, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, physical therapists, it's something that we need to be more aware of. And I think a lot of these things happen underneath the surface. There may be subconscious biases that we hold against certain groups of people, which is why I think it's really important that we have more people with disabilities in the medical profession to kind of put some of those biases to rest, or at least bring them to light so that we can confront them head on.
Tell me a little more about how you think that would help, having more doctors with disabilities. It's not just that the doctors with disabilities would be better at treating people with disabilities because they'd probably have more empathy. I mean, you'd hope at least. But you think it's just the exposure that everyone in the industry would have if we had more MDs that were also confined to a wheelchair or hearing impaired or visually impaired.
I think that's right. And so I think part of it, a small part of it, is actually the fact that patients from minority backgrounds, whether that's a racial or ethnic minority, whether that's sexual orientation, whether that's disability, they tend to feel more comfortable with doctors who are of a similar background. But I think it goes far beyond that. And so, you know, when we have deficiencies in medical training or in the way that the medical profession provides care, we often think we need to have more lectures or we need to have more modules to get people up to speed. But I think much more powerful would be to have more people with a disability, a hearing impairment, a visual impairment, a motor impairment in the medical profession, so we can all understand how particular disabilities do or perhaps do not affect the way that they go about their daily lives. And so, you know, what I would say is that it's not just the fact that the patients may feel more comfortable, but it's all that the entire medical profession would start to respond to people with disabilities differently because they're working so closely with people who sometimes have those disabilities as well.
In all of my years and my encounters with doctors in hospitals and in clinics, I have never met one with a disability, at least not one that was obvious. Mm-hmm. So those with disabilities are a very small percentage of the medical community. Why is that?
It's true. And so, you know, about, as you said, 20% of the population, and these estimates kind of vary, but most estimates peg around 20% of the U.S. population has a disability, but actually fewer than 1 or 2% of practicing physicians do. And most of the physicians that do have a disability acquire them after medical school. And so it's not as if people with disabilities enter medical school, but maybe they get a disability in residency or sometime thereafter. And there's probably a number of reasons for this, but one is that medical schools aren't always seen as accepting of people with disabilities as they could be. They're not as proactive at reaching out to people and helping them understand that that there is a place for someone with a disability within the medical profession. So as just one example, there was a study that was published last year that basically looked at the technical standards that medical schools put on their website. And the technical standards are the abilities, whether cognitive or physical abilities, that medical schools require for admission. And once again, the issue here is that medical schools are free to determine these standards as they see fit in accordance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So it's not a standard protocol across the country, but each medical school comes up with it. And what the researchers found was most medical schools had some kind of statement on their website, but many of those statements were difficult to read. Only about a third of these statements said that they would explicitly support people with disabilities, and almost two-thirds of these lacked information about who would provide accommodations for these types of disabilities. Would it be the student's responsibility, or would the school help out? And so there's a lot that we can do from a very early stage in medical training to make sure that people who have some form of disability feel more comfortable and accepted entering this profession.
Would they also, though, need to choose their specialties fairly carefully? I mean, certainly there are some medical specialties that simply won't work if you don't have, you know, full, if you're not able to stand or if you can't use both of your hands. I mean, that physical disabilities can be limiting in some aspects of medicine.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that people will have to determine over the course of their training, what specialties make the most sense for them. The nice thing about the medical profession is that there's such a diversity of things that one can do, whether it's surgery or other procedures, whether it's internal medicine, cardiology, it could be psychiatry, dermatology. There's such a variety of ways that people can be doctors and ways that they can help other patients. And so that's something that my sense is that people will start to understand over the course of their careers, and so they will gravitate towards the medical subspecialties that make the most sense for them. But I should also point out that there are things that we can do to help. And so, you know, one of the people with a disability that I came across when I was researching this article was someone with a hearing disability, and she uses an amplified stethoscope that helps her hear just as well as everyone else. And so as technology starts to improve, there may be less and less of a gap for between people who have disabilities and people who don't, and technology can really help fill that gap.
And that doctor that you just mentioned with the hearing impairment, also I thought was really interesting. She talked about how she understands maybe better, is better able to address the hearing challenges of some of her older patients because she understands
right.
that some it's not just about speaking louder. Sometimes it's
right.
about certain types of word formations that are difficult.
Right. And that's something that, you know, someone without a hearing disability might not be able to do. And so what Dr. Cohen in the article that I wrote mentioned is that when she has trouble hearing, she's experienced this all her life, she understands that your brain starts to parse words and syllables in a different way to try to put things together in a way that makes sense. And so it's not a matter of repeating oneself louder and louder to get the point across. Better it would be to rephrase yourself, to say things in a slightly different way, slightly different syllables or slightly different sentence structure. And she feels like she's able to communicate with her older patients who have who need hearing aids or are hard of hearing in a better way than her colleagues who don't have hearing disabilities are able to do. And so there's, I think, a number of ways that people in the medical profession who have a disability probably have that ability to connect both on an emotional level but on a very practical level as well with people who they're treating.
Just finally, Dr. Kular, you write in the article about your sister who has cerebral palsy and just graduated from medical school. What are her plans, and is she the reason that you're thinking about these questions?
She's a huge reason that I came to this topic, and she's, you know, someone that I admire tremendously and I'm very proud of. And she has had a disability known as cerebral palsy. She was born 3 months prematurely, and she was actually born overseas. And she was born the same year that the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed, and was a big reason that my parents wanted to come to America for that kind of equality of opportunity for everyone. And she's struggled over the years with her, some of her physical limitations, but she's overcome every one with a supportive family and supportive mentors, supportive teachers. And as I wrote, she recently graduated from medical school, and she's going to be a radiation oncologist. She's going to treat patients with cancer, and she's going to be a fantastic doctor, in part because I think she has experienced very deeply what it means to be a patient, what it means to be vulnerable, what it means to put your life in someone else's hands. And so I think she's very empathic and able to empathize with her patients in a way that maybe other doctors are not.
Dhruv Kular is a physician at the New York Presbyterian Hospital and a researcher at the Weill Cornell Department of Healthcare Policy and Research. Dr. Kular, thank you very much for your time today. I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is Top of Mind on BYU Radio.